Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
No, it's just Bobby again. No Jane and Bobby. Jane Slater is out again this week. She's on the road. She is just up to her ears in work right now. She's actually got the Jaguars-Dolphins game this week for NFL Network. So she's off on assignment doing all that. But today I do have a good friend with me. It's Lori Haresh from ESPN Australia, where he co-hosts the Monday Arvo NFL show. What is Arvo? See, Lori here is like I referenced, ESPN Australia. Lori's from Australia. We've known each other for probably about 4 years now. And Lori has taught me all sorts of great slang, like bogan. Love using that one a lot. We can, get into some more slang later that, Lori can teach you guys. But Arvo, that's the afternoon, or is that like tomorrow, or what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, that's the afternoon. It's close to Avo, which is our shortening for avocado, but it's Arvo. So I know the R's get a little lost when you come down to Australia, and it's a little funny over there with all your crazy accents from the north to the south and the east to the west in the US. But yeah, Monday Arvo NFL show, afternoon, the football. Unlike over in the glorious United States, where you get this fantastic day from, lunchtime till bedtime, where you're just watching football on a Sunday and drinking beer and having barbecue and all that, it kicks off at 3 a.m. and Monday morning for us over here. So we watch from 3 a.m., probably get up about 2:30 a.m., set the fantasy lineup till about 2 in the afternoon. And then we, hop on the Facebook stream for ESPN Australia, me and Phil Murphy, talk a little football. And it's a lovely way to spend an hour.
So you get up at 2 in the morning to watch the Cowboys play.
Yeah, well, it depends.
Well, NFL in general, but yeah.
NFL in general, the Cowboys being who they are often on the one of the primetime games, whether that's the mid-afternoon slate over there in your American time zones or Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football. But yeah, 3 a.m., you're up bright and early, watching 9 games at once, trying to, keep abreast of everything that's going on from pillar to post in the National Football League.
Now, Arvo, that was also that Ben Affleck movie that won Best Picture like 8 years ago, I think, about the Iran hostage crisis, right?
I'm not getting into pop culture.
No, or was that takes with that, you. That was Argo, I think. I don't think that was Arvo. It's the same thing. So the Monday Argo show, the Monday Argo NFL show starring Ben Affleck and Lori Haresh. You can check it out on ESPN Australia or social channels or wherever else. Now, I got to tell y'all, so like I said, Lori and I have known each other for about 4 years now. This actually, where we first met was watching the NFL draft in 2016. We were at the Maverick Bar, Mike Fisher's Maverick Bar. And that was the Ezekiel Elliott, Dak Prescott draft. A lot of what we see now about their success was built in that weekend. We all then drove down to Austin for day two to hang out in Cammy Griffin's neck of the woods. And we were all stunned when they picked Jalen Smith. That was, and then we all were driving back to Dallas for rounds 4 through 7 and heard them pick Dak Prescott and were thrilled, but we're more thrilled a little earlier when the Raiders went ahead and took Connor Cook, which everybody was terrified is who the Cowboys wanted. There was a lot of great memories made there. I'll specifically remember that before we drove back to Austin, my wife had to go run and get your debit card, which you left at Mike Fisher's Maverick Bar. And then I remember that, we were going out later that evening, round 2 of the draft. We were going out to Austin. We were looking for some places to hang out. And the first place we stopped, I remember they wouldn't let us in because Lori was wearing a jersey. He was wearing a Sean Lee jersey, as a matter of fact, and it was too casual a look. And so they said, nope, you can't come in with a jersey. So, we cried. We cried discrimination, that they wouldn't let a man in with a Sean Lee jersey. And then, we went off and had fun the rest of the night. But that was a great trip. That was fun. I enjoyed it.
Imagine my dismay having flown something like 15,000 kilometers. And yeah, I'm going to stick with kilometers, Bobby. I'm not doing miles for you.
How many is that? How many kilometers?
I've flown all the way over. I know 10,000 miles, maybe. Flown all the way over there. It's draft season. I'm in the heart of Texas. I'm wearing a Sean Lee jersey and I, you know, I'm denied entry to a bar. So, you know, that was Austin, a low.
Had you done it in Dallas, you would have been fine. It was Austin though. I mean, they're weird there. I mean, I love Austin.
The few times I've been on a flight to Dallas and I've rocked any Cowboys gear, you get a whole lot of love on the plane. You get a whole, there's dap going on. There's head nods. It smiles all it, but you get invited to tailgate parties. It's all happening. That was a great trip. There's video evidence of me losing my collective marbles when they picked Jalen Smith in the second round.
All of us. Actually, I think I was shooting it. So you didn't see me in it, but you saw Bryson Treese from Inside the Star and RJ Ochoa and you and Patrick Walker and Cammy Griffin. Everybody's just kind of melting down like, oh my gosh, they just took Jalen Smith. I mean, it was kind of exciting, but it was also like, wow, this is either going to boom or bust. What would you say before we get into this Atlanta game, which was nuts? What would you grade that pick at this point? I mean, considering he was a second rounder, and I mean, there are times where he's not what you want him to be, but I mean, overall, second round pick, I think you can effectively say that that turned out to be a good pick.
I think you're
maybe
probably
not a, maybe a little, not a good contract, but a good pick, I think you can say it was.
It's a bad contract. I for me, I don't know. I'd give that, separated from the storyline, you're going to give an A+, considering what happened to his knee, the injury he went through, how he came back, the journey, you know, the moment when he got picked and how that was, you know, was shared with his family as well. But I'd probably give it about a C+ in terms of the return that you're going to get on a second round pick. It was a high second round pick. These are the investments that make up the core of your roster or should make up the core of your roster. And any of his work that you see in coverage and when he's really asked to change direction laterally quickly, it's such a liability. 2018 was fantastic. 2019 was a step back. And through 2 weeks, that contract is starting to look like an albatross hanging around the Cowboys' necks. And something that, particularly when you throw it up in stark contrast with the decision to let like a Byron Jones go and where the investment went on the defensive side of the ball there. I think this is one they're going to look to regret. And it's not one they can get out of, I'm pretty sure, from a salary cap standpoint for a little bit to come.
Yeah, I think he looked better in week two than he did in week one. I mean, what we saw in training camp, the little bit we were allowed to see, that Mike McCarthy, you know, sitting there and tapping his fingers together and laughing maniacally at what he shows us at practice. The little bit that we did get to see, he looked like he was a lot better in coverage and he looked like he was a more natural Will than playing the mic. And so, you know, you had some excitement and then you watch the first week and you see, oh gosh, here we go again, over pursuit and aggressiveness. And that's probably what I would say is the biggest thing that happens is he's so aggressive and he flies to one side of the play so much that it's just, you know, anybody who's got the ball in open space, just, okay, I'm going to stop and I'll start up again and I'll cut back. And he runs by so many plays. I think he's got some great natural ability, but you know, it's almost like the last 2 years of his NFL tape. I know you'll remember this. It's almost like the last 2 years of his NFL tape has looked a little bit like Malik Jefferson's college tape at Texas. Like it's that just guessing and flying to the ball, and when it works great. And then there are other times where it just he blows by the play and you know leaves you open for a running back screen to pick up like 20 yards.
Arriving with contact, with heavy contact and bad intentions, you know, separating ball from carrier, straight line speed, and coming downhill, those are the strengths of his game. But unfortunately, the key word you threw in there was guessing. It does look like he's guessing a lot of times, and he's not guessing correct a lot of the times. And unfortunately, if you're flying with bad intentions at breakneck speed, down the line, you know, whether it's across the line of scrimmage or down towards a ball carrier, if you pick wrong, that just means you're taking you out of the play quicker in a more devastating fashion, not in terms of devastating the offense, but devastating what you've done for the rest of the assignments. For the defense and gaps that you open up, because, you know, we see that play out. You can talk about his work in coverage, but even against the run, the Cowboys, statistics aside, when you watch situational football, they've had some serious problems clogging the run, and he's been, you know, a big part of that and that kind of decline in production they've seen at the linebacker level.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I do think he played better in week two than he did in week one. I mean, yeah. He had that play against Hayden Hurst. I think, you know, he did make a couple of good plays, you know, diagnosing in the run game a couple times, was able to make some stops. I mean, as a whole, I think the defense has been pretty disappointing to this point. You know, at all levels, you thought you were going to get better linebacker play. That hasn't really happened yet, except Joe Thomas. So I thought Joe Thomas played like really good football, not even within the context of, oh, here's a backup coming in and stepping in and playing this game against the Falcons. I thought just overall, like in any context, Joe Thomas played really good football on Sunday against the Falcons. And But outside of that, you know, Vander Esch got hurt again. You've got Jalen Smith struggling at times early. The pass rush is not generating the pressure that you thought they would. I tweeted on Wednesday that or on Tuesday that if you look at the Cowboys pass rush, they have the fourth fewest quarterback hits in the NFL right now with 7 through 2 weeks. That's behind you're tied with the Dolphins, and it's behind the Bengals and Vikings, who have 4. And then the Panthers, who stunningly have 1 quarterback hit through 2 weeks, which, I mean, God be with you, Matt Rhule and Carolina Panthers fans. That seems pretty rough. But expanding on that game a little bit, this is the first chance that we've had to react to it. 40-39, of course, the most improbable of wins. I put it right up there with, and I don't know how many of these games you'd remember, but over the last like 20 years in terms of just like insane endings, I put it up there with 2003 week 2 against the Giants. That was the that was a game where Matt Bryant, they're up 3 with 11 seconds left, the Giants just have to squib kick it and it's over, and he kicks it out of bounds to the 1, puts him at the 40. Quincy Carter hits Antonio Bryant for 20 yards, gets out of bounds, and then Billy Cundiff kicks a field goal to send it into overtime from 50 yards out or something. They win that game in overtime. You've got the 2004 game against the Seahawks, where Julius Jones had 3 touchdowns and almost 200 yards rushing, and they were down 10 with like 2 minutes left, and then they score a touchdown, recover an onside kick, and then march down the field and score another touchdown. And then 2007, the Bills game, where Romo threw 5 interceptions, and they get the touchdown, then Terrell Owens drops the tying 2-point conversion, but then they get the onside kick, quickly get into field goal range, spike it with like a second left, and then Nick Folk knocks down those back-to-back 53-yarders, the first one getting canceled when Dick Geron got a timeout to ice him. But it was that sort of a crazy finish where when they didn't get the 2-point conversion with about 5 minutes left, it kind of felt hopeless and like, okay, well, that's game. You're not going to be able to get 2 more scoring drives together, and yet they do. And they end out getting the glorious benefit of 2 big plays, I think, 2 big flubs from the Falcons. One was the, I believe it was in the fourth quarter, the Julio Jones wide open touchdown drop that should have iced the game. And then there was the Falcons just flat out not knowing the rule about you could touch the ball before it went 10 yards to recover it. I mean, that's the biggest benefit that the receiving team has in the onside kick scenario, is that for the first 10 yards, the defense isn't allowed to do anything with it. You can pick it up, and if you just cover it, it's over. And the Falcons let it go 10 yards, and then C.J. Goodwin, you know, grabs it, picks it up, and they're able to march out. I don't know about you. As soon as I saw that onside kick was recovered, I was like, okay, Dallas is winning this game.
Yeah, I had complete confidence as soon as they came up with the ball, and you could tell by the body language around that scrum that emerged on the ground that it was going Dallas's way. And supreme confidence at Dak was going to be able to lead that team down, get in field goal range, and finish this thing off. With that, with the mentality of the Falcons, with their hands team, do we know, have we had comments come out about whether they got the rule, their interpretation of the ruling was wrong, or the rules was wrong in terms of waiting the 10 yards, or whether they were just scared of the spinning ball? And if so, I understand it's spinning, you know, it's spinning like a dreidel there, you know, rapidly. It looked like a little cyclone on the ground there, that little ball, but at that pace, it's not that hard to fall on top of it. You don't need to pick it up with one hand, run, beat 6 defenders, and make your way down the rest of the field. You just need to fall down. And at that pace, Apple, that's not a hard job. I understand the pressure of NFL football. We're media members here, sitting here, casting aspersions about what goes on when you've got this, you know, hulking professional athletes around you, and the, you know, a game is in the final throes. But a mind-numbing mistake there, and a collective mistake from that hands team. But with everything that Dak, and I know I'm talking to, you know, arguably the biggest Dak fan.
Not arguable. Don't say arguable. We know I'm the president of the Dak Prescott fan club. I have been since day one. As we mentioned, that trip that you came down for, I was most excited when they picked Dak Prescott in the fourth round, because as I said, I had a first round grade on the guy leading up to the draft. I was big on him. But I mean, I think even still, he's performed at a level that I don't think even I anticipated when I said that. And you know, I've got plenty of misses. I don't want to just, like, you know, spike and say, oh yeah, I had Dak Prescott, because I also had Laquon Treadwell and said Charles Harris was like a top 5 player and things like that. And so I got plenty of misses. But no, I think it's fair to say I'm president of the Dak Prescott fan club. I don't think there's any questioning that.
Well, I think that's very, you know, you've done that very humbly. You've shown great humility and grace taking that mantle. But yeah, with everything that he'd done in that game to that point, the poise, not just the production, and we know the weapons he's working with there with the 3 wide receivers, You know, and the breakout Dalton Schultz game. But everything that he'd done, the calmness that he'd shown in that pocket, the toughness that he'd shown in the pocket, working with two offensive tackles that were getting bullied is a kind way to put it.
I think that's a little much. I think Terrence Steele was getting bullied pretty bad in the first half. I think overall Brandon Knight played well. I think Brandon Knight did a good job for the most part.
I'm not sure when I became the harsh critic and you became the nicer guy to the Cowboys, but that seems to be the tone we're setting early on.
I mean, you got, and maybe part of it was there were a lot of quick throws and there was not a lot of play action. I think there were 9 of his 48 dropbacks were play action throws. And so they weren't doing a lot of slower developing plays. And so maybe that's why it looked as good as it did, but I didn't see a ton of pressure leaking through the left side. I did on the right side early. I think the first few drives were really rough for Terrence Steele. I think he settled down and they game planned for some chips and some quick throws to kind of neutralize that. But I think overall, I think Brandon Knight played better than Terrence Steele did.
And I think most Cowboys fans and people in the media probably would have expected Knight to have a better showing than Steele, given what we've seen from him before and the surprise that Steele was getting the nod from week one on. But, and you mentioned the play action there. That's something to look forward to from this game. It wasn't featured highly, but Dak was so good and has been, particularly the strides we saw last year when they employ that. Once, hopefully, they get healthier on the offensive line and those pillars at left and right tackle make their way back with Smith and Collins, what that can open up down the field and with deep crossing routes and the mixture of formations that hopefully Kellen Moore can cook up, misdirection, throw that in there. I know, and you know, we can talk about pre-snap motion. I know that's had plenty of airtime.
I want to say pre-snap motion because they had a lot. They actually did have a lot of it. But I think there's, again, a misunderstanding of what type of motion you're looking for. I think when you look at Sean McVay and the Rams and some of what they do in Kansas City and things like that and Baltimore, what you're looking at is motion at the snap. Guys moving, you know, and because honestly, to me, you don't even have to fake the handoff. Anybody running, you know, jet motion behind the quarterback as the ball is snapped is in effect has the same effect as play action. You don't even have to go for the fake, I don't think, because teams immediately at the snap of the ball have to like watch for any sort of pitch or anything like that. So I think that it's actually it has that benefit without you even having to do it. And so, you know, without having to actually fake the handoff to Zeke or anybody else, you can get that same sort of benefit by snap at the motion or motion at the snap. And motion at the snap, I think they had six plays is what I think it was out of 80 plus. Yeah. And they had some pre-snap motion, but pre-snap motion is also a little bit of a generous term. The guy they sent in motion the most in that game was Ezekiel Elliott. They sent him in motion 12 times, and sending him in motion counts as, you know, he is standing on one side of Dak and then shifts to the other side, or, you know, yeah, it wasn't a whole bunch of elaborate stuff. The receiver that they're sending in motion the most, though, is Coop. Amari Cooper's moving. I think he had 11 plays where he was, you know, exhibiting pre-snap motion. That's moving all the way across the formation. But I mean, if you're then going to send a guy in motion and, you know, you wait another 3 seconds until after they're set to go ahead and like snap the ball, it kind of defeats the purpose of any sort of misdirection or anything else. So I do want to clear that up for people who talk about motion and then they see the statistics of, wow, it looks like the Cowboys had a lot of pre-snap motion. Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of defeated if it's more functionally being treated as just a shift. You're shifting sides and guys are being carried, but it's that motion at the snap that you want to see. And they had success with it when they used it. CeeDee Lamb had, I think, like a 10-yard jet sweep. Dak completed both of his passes on those and it caused for some soft looks on one side of the formation. And so I do think that we'd like to see a little bit more of that. And I think that you can get that benefit without even needing your tackles in there. You can get that benefit with, and I think it would actually cancel out some of your concerns about pressure coming from certain sides while your tackles are out.
Well, the whole idea when, and you've made a nice delineation between the different types of it, but the whole idea with these motions or shifts, you know, at the snap, pre-snap, you don't want to allow the defense to then have time. As you said, if you move, make changes in the alignment and then settle and allow 3, 4, 5 seconds for the defense to respond, you're not getting that benefit. The whole idea is you want to put them in two minds. Maybe you want to get a tell on the type of coverage and the type of look that they're really giving you, whether they're disguising something or not. So when you do slow that down and don't get that in that, don't employ it with the fluidity and the pace that we do see from, say, a Sean McVay, then you're not getting the benefit. On a grander scheme, what can open up with more time in the pocket for Dak, allowing some, you know, more slow developing plays to emerge when you do get those tackles back, particularly in the play action game, could be something we could see Dak elevate to an even greater level than we've seen already, coming off a ridiculous statistical day with 450 yards. But yeah, I think that's one of the confusing things. You mentioned how what you can employ with this jet action can provide some of that similar effect, considering what you are struggling with on the offensive line. And there were some bizarre scenes there when you go back and watch the tape where you do see Zach Martin taking care of his business, and perhaps some of the other members of the offensive line are like allowing 3 or 4 more yards of giveaway at the line.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think Connor Williams has to really step up, especially right now. Connor Williams has got to play better. You know, we talked earlier about Jalen Smith and the expectations of a second round pick. He has got to seize that job. He's got to do a better job at left guard.
Do you anticipate, I know that there's been next to no buzz on someone like a Connor McGovern, but is there any talk at all? You're man on the ground over there. Are we seeing a challenge at all? Or is this really Williams is kind of head and shoulders above the rest of the competition, at least in the eyes of the decision-makers?
I think given the COVID offseason and some of the difficulties establishing the offseason program, I mean, McGovern's practically a rookie given his injury situation last year. And then you've got another rookie in Biotish. And, you know, I think that it's tough to, you know, go ahead and put anybody else in there for them, because they do feel like Connor Williams at least has the experience and has played alongside not just Tyron Smith. He's played alongside Joe Looney at center, and he's had that experience with him. And so I do think that it was about continuity for them, and that's more what they were concerned about with this year. But yeah, you got to start wondering at some point, when is Connor McGovern going to get his shot? And you know, they're going to have to, I saw John Owning from the Dallas Morning News on Twitter, tweeting some clips of how these combo blocks that Connor Williams and Joe Looney are trying to make these first couple games, they're not in sync. One play specifically where, Connor Williams ended up taking kind of the inside shoulder on a defensive tackle, which is where Joe Looney was supposed to hit. And then Joe Looney goes to hit and falls over because he doesn't have anywhere. So yeah, they've got a lot to iron out, because here's the thing: with your tackles out, you're running starting, you know, your two starting tackles are out, you're running backup tackles out there. You can't then have mistakes from two of your three guys on the interior who aren't in sync, because then you're practically running out there with, you know, deficiencies at four of your five offensive line spots. And so they definitely got to get things together, and Connor Williams has to step up his level of play. Joe Looney too. But I mean, I really feel like there's more pressure on Connor Williams to have this thing come together. Cause we're, you know, his first 2 years here, he had the, you know, Xavier Suafilo kind of competition over his shoulder. And there were times that the Garrett regime felt like Suafilo was a better option for them. And Suafilo was a guy who was similar to Connor Williams in that he was a second round pick and had kind of been considered a bit of a failure in previous spots, and yet he was able to come here and take the job of somebody in a similar stand. And so I do think that, you know, any of that pressure is gone from Connor Williams, and now's the time that he needs to step up. He doesn't need to shrink in these moments, especially when you've got your tackles out and you need that.
You can't afford for him to do that. They've gone, when you look at Looney and Williams, they've gone from the two big question marks on the offensive line, at least how you had it scripted, how you thought you were going to come into this with your three Pro Bowl or All Pro talents at left tackle, right tackle, and of course Zach Martin. Right. And that's not your role anymore. Your role is actually, you're now two of the three most experienced guys out there, and you're no longer going to need to be performing. You no longer can be performing at a level where, okay, we can support you here. We can, you know, Tyron can jump across and help you, or, you know, maybe save right. you here or there, provide a little bit of support. That's completely flipped now. So for Williams, who has, you know, he has all the pedigree you'd want from where he was drafted and his reputation and some of the tape he had in college, I think it's hard to say anything but a disappointment as the, you know, as a second round pick and an investment that we thought was going to take, you know, take the Cowboys into the second phase of this new era of the Great Wall of Dallas.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I mean, I think there's been a little bit of a, they're on a streak now of some disappointments with the offensive line picks, I think, or at least as it stands now. And, you know, time's wasting. You've already seen Travis Frederick retire. You know, I don't know how much more of Tyron Smith's prime you're going to have. It's safe to say that even though he's one of the better ones, it's probably safe to say we've already exited Tyron Smith's prime, I think. And he's no longer going to be the, you know, number one dominant tackle like he once was. I mean, Zach Martin is still one of the best guards in football, if not the best, but who knows how long that can go on. And you've got Lyle Collins who looked really good last season, looked like one of the best right tackles in the league last season. But then, you know, seemed to show up to camp out of shape. And so there's a lot of questions there along the offensive line that they're going to have to figure out. And that's just one issue of, you know, as much as everybody was excited and it was this big comeback victory, there were a lot of issues on Sunday and there were a lot of things that need to be answered moving forward. And with that, we're actually going to, I told Lori that we were going to do 20 questions, 20 Cowboys questions. So we're going to finish up here with 20 questions. And I don't mean finish up like we have 5 minutes left because there's 20 questions here and there's a lot to talk about. So I'm just going to give you kind of a potpourri of like 20 of the big questions facing the Cowboys right now, or 20 questions that I'm just curious for your answers about. So you ready? All right. So let's go with number one. Ezekiel Elliott is third in the NFL and first in the NFC in touches. Is that a good or bad thing?
I think it's a bad thing for the rest of the season. I don't think that you're going to be able to, you're not going to come up against teams that have softer defense as we saw in week two. I think you're going to need more stability out of the offensive front. I think there's going to be less lanes as well as he's playing, and he's got all the juice back. He's got all the power back that you'd love to see. As well as he's playing, I think you come up against nastier fronts. That offensive line is not getting back to a level top 15-ish, you know, far away from top 10 offensive line in the league. The lanes are going to be, you know, far more hard slogging when it comes to Zeke's production. So I think I'd want to see more out there to the three wide receivers, trying to break off some more chunk plays and making this a little easier. And I don't want to see us decline back into the grind to third and five, third and four, give ourselves a chance every single set of downs. Yeah, for me, it's as good as he's looked, that's not a good thing.
I think he's played six really good quarters of football, and I think he's played two really bad quarters of football. I did not think his first half on Sunday was good at all. I thought that he missed in pass protection a couple times. You know, I think that he didn't have those, you know, momentum building runs. He didn't have any of the, you know, punishing runs. He had those two fumbles, one of which was actually lost. I thought Ezekiel Elliott actually was a big reason you fell down 20-0. And he was putting you in some bad down and distance situations. And so I do think that there's a place for Ezekiel Elliott in this offense, just with as talented as he is. And I don't mean that to sound as a discounting of his talent. It's to say there's a place in here. Ezekiel Elliott's one of the better running backs in the league. But I don't think it'd be really easy to misuse him to your detriment, even as talented as I think the best running back in the NFL would be easy to misuse to your detriment. And I think that's something that the Cowboys need to avoid. I think they need to ride Dak Prescott to any sort of success. And to actually, you know, people used to think it's chicken and the egg, which comes first. Does the run set up the pass or the pass set up the run? You need the pass to soften things up for the running game if you want it to be as efficient as possible. Question two here. Has CeeDee Lamb already supplanted Michael Gallup as the team's number two receiver in terms of an option, because he's already seen more target? Amari Cooper's been the number one the first few weeks in terms of action, what he's getting in terms of targets and the routes he's running. But in terms of targets, CeeDee Lamb is ahead of Michael Gallup right now in targets and production. Lamb and Coop through 2 weeks are both on pace to get somewhere around 1,400 yards. Gallup's at about 800. And he's got five or six fewer targets, I think, than CeeDee Lamb. So is CeeDee Lamb already this team's number two receiver?
Yes. Yeah, it happened quicker than I thought it would. I think quicker than a lot of people thought it would. But everything they ask him, every little bit more they put on his plate, he delivers and comes back asking what's next. He's excelled at, you know, we've seen him in motion. We've seen him in the short part of the field. We've seen him make big chunk plays downfield. He provides huge, huge gain right there at the end to help set up the field goal. Unless my bleary 4, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning mind is misremembering that. I think everything that you've asked of him, he's answered, delivered, and gone beyond that. So, yeah, I think he's already the number two. And that's no slight on Michael Gallup, who is outstanding. The conversation coming into this season before and after CeeDee Lamb turned up was that this guy was a 1B, and that, you know, in the future, is it going to be the is the equation going to come down to other teams going to offer to pay him like their number one wide receiver? But it, no slight on him, makes a huge catch that, you know, one cheek equals 2 feet, all that. And comes up big with, you know, in an area of the field that he has shown in his first couple of years in the season that he is a weapon and a strong force to go up and get that ball. But yeah, I think CeeDee Lamb has shown just the tip of the iceberg, but it's of his talent, but it's already enough to put him in the number two slot.
I want to prepare Cowboys fans for something, and I'm not trying to be bleak, but as much as everybody thought, oh yeah, this is a three receiver league, so now you've got your guys, your receivers set for the next few years. I don't know that they're going to view it as a wise investment of capital to pay three receivers big money, especially when they're trying to pay a quarterback and they've got the running back locked in for as long as they do. I just wouldn't be surprised if we've just got 2 years, you know, two more years left of Michael Gallup, and that when, you know, his contract runs out, that they're just grooming it for what they really view as their duo into the future, which is Cooper and Lamb. But that's just my own take. Question three here. What grade would you give Mike McCarthy's coaching through two games?
C plus, I think would be a fair rank. There's some situational stuff. I'm not going to jump on him
Would the C, just a flat C, are we calling a flat C Jason Garrett? And so anything above it or below it is how he's doing relative to expectations. So would you say above Jason Garrett, maybe?
I think flat C is a beautiful way to put Jason Garrett's grading number or grading letter there. So yeah, just above it. I completely understand and completely I'm on board with when they went for the 2-point conversion, how the math works out, wanting to know your reality sooner rather than later. But there's elements to what we've seen from, I mean, this is his ship, right? We can criticize Kellen Moore. We can criticize Mike Nolan. We could look at special teams gaffes that they've been, but this is not what we expected. I don't think we expected the offense to, at a lot of the time, look very Garrett Linehan-ish. And again, yes, you can point to the continuity of Kellen Moore there, but they just didn't look, particularly in that first game, they didn't look prepared. No, sorry. Of course, they didn't look prepared in the first quarter, especially of the Atlanta game. But seeing how blatantly they looked out-coached and out-schemed early on was massively disappointing. Credit to him, his team, you can say his team certainly showed toughness, but I'm putting way more of that on Dak Prescott and co. in week two than on Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, I think there was a huge lack of preparation in 2019 heading into game day, and that was something that we heard a lot. Now, players pushed back against that and said, this isn't about, you know, preparation, this is about execution. I think that I might argue that that team on Sunday looked in the first quarter more unprepared than any game I saw them last year. That team looked like they sleepwalked into that game, and that falls on Mike McCarthy. And so I think that he's lucky to be 1-1. He realistically should be 0-2, something that, by the way, Jason Garrett never did. The team never started the year 0-2 under Jason Garrett. I think C is fair. I think he has been equal to what fans always said about Jason Garrett at this point. Question four, the Cowboys' best player on defense through two games has been?
I mean, week one, you're going to give it to probably Alden Smith. I think week two was, you know, stepping in there. We've already brought up his name, but Joe Thomas, I think he was the best defender on the field. And I think, yeah, I'm considering his limited opportunity versus, well, you know, Alden Smith's working in a rotation there, but coming from, he wasn't expected to be a heavy game day contributor to jumping in there and playing, you know, the expectation now until Van Der Esch gets back, until Sean Lee works his way back into the mix as well, is that we're looking at a guy who's going to be playing starter snaps. I'm going to give it to Joe Thomas. I know Xavier Woods had a decent performance this past week as well, but going to give it to Joe Thomas. Not only that, I think he's going to need to continue to provide that type of output considering the questions in the middle of that Cowboys defense right up the same.
Yeah, I think Joe Thomas, I mean, you could argue the fact that he stepped in and played for Leighton Vander Esch and played well against the Rams. I don't think he was all world, but I mean, I think he played well against the Rams, and then he had a really good game against the Falcons. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily sustainable, but I think you can say that overall through 2 weeks, the best performance they've gotten has been from Joe Thomas. Number five, what Cowboys criticism through 2 weeks, Cowboys narrative, whatever else, which one is the most blown out of proportion? Which one is the biggest overreaction and the one that you don't see as a sustainable criticism?
I know I just gave the guy like a C or a C plus, but the criticism over the 2-point attempts has been the most overblown for me. I think if you're looking at, I think I tweeted something out like this. If you're looking at the play you got from the offensive line, what's going on, where the absentee pressures of this pass rush with these three big names, these three big talents in D'Law, Griffin, and Alden Smith, where the pressure on the quarterback has gone, and the issues that we knew coming into the season at the secondary, the lack of, I'd say lack of talent because there's talent there, but the lack of proven talent, I'd say at the NFL level, the safety and cornerback position, Diggs has come in and helped there. I think with all those problems that we've seen, the fact that people want to zone in on a guy who's getting aggressive with 2-point conversions and the maths and the science adds up for it, that's for me has been the most overblown.
I think that there was a lot of undue criticism the first week to the safety play. I think Darian Thompson played better than people were giving him credit for. I mean, they were talking about him as if he, you know, had the worst game of anybody on the field, and I just don't think that was accurate. And I think that Xavier Woods had a good game in, you know, the second week. And so I think overall just this, we need Earl Thomas, we need some safety. To me, safety is not the biggest concern right now. So I think that's kind of been blown out of proportion has been the level of play from the safeties. Not to say they've been Pro Bowl level, but I don't think they've been below average necessarily.
You don't want Taylor Rapp, Bobby?
Oh, I mean, I'd love Taylor Rapp. But, I mean, you know, they made their bed and they got to lie in it now. And to his credit, Tristan Hill, I thought, played well on Sunday too. I think Tristan Hill was actually one of the more consistent players they had on defense on Sunday. So, number six, what Cowboys criticism through the first 2 weeks is the most sustainable and has the most long-term concern for you?
Cowboys criticism that has been them... Well, the most long-term concern, mm-hmm. I know of just given the guy, you know, playing next to him, defensive MVP, the concern over Jalen Smith is the most troubling for me, just with how much is on his plate, how much he needs to contribute. I'm going to pivot there. Sorry, I've given you half an answer there.
Oh my God.
The biggest concern is the edge rush, the pressure from the defensive front. I think the criticism of them is fair. I know it's blown up on Twitter this week and we don't need to dive into all of that, but the fact that we're not seeing clearly superior talent take advantage of definitely not facing elite offensive lines, and that they're not pushing the pocket, they're not causing quarterbacks to be under consistent heat. That for me is the biggest long-term and most sincere and severe criticism that the Cowboys have got so far.
I don't know what they're going to do at cornerback. I don't see anywhere where they're going to get consistent play for the rest of the year. That's the biggest thing to me right now is as much as a lot of this talk was about, and part of it could be on the pass rush too, about how they were going to, you know, get better opportunities with the pass rush and they were going to be disguising coverages. They weren't going to be as predictable any longer pre-snap. Even if that's going on and that's the case, it has not resulted in better play. We've seen busted coverages. We've seen, honestly, just not good play from Chido Awuzie through the first couple weeks. And you're going to have to, you've already got Anthony Brown on injured reserve. Jordan Lewis, I've always loved Jordan Lewis, as you know.
Me too.
I've been a big fan of his. I think Jordan Lewis, dating back to the second half of last year and then into this year, has not played great football. And, you know, you're kind of relying on a rookie and Trayvon Diggs to do a lot for you. And so, for me, the biggest thing, the biggest worry for me is in a league that has become so pass heavy, I don't know where the Cowboys are getting coverage right now. And that's terrifying to me, I think, for their, you know, long-term sustainability. Number seven here, should the Cowboys make a trade for a veteran corner?
Yes, if there's one out there, absolutely. The only reason I didn't pick the corner in the previous question or the cornerback spot is because that's my expectation coming into this was they were going to struggle. Yeah, if there's a corner out there, and I haven't perused the depth charts of late, but if you can make it work with a contract, if you can find yourself some level-headed, calm, veteran presence that you can inject that works well in the Nolan scheme, because it does seem to be like the talent – whether you have faith in the Awuzies and the Jordan Lewises of the world, and Diggs, I think, has shown some really bright spots early on. the talent that you have there, this new era, this disguised schemes, these different looks, we're not going to be as basic. It doesn't seem to be meshing. If you can find a fit, yeah, go out and make a trade, especially considering the comp picks that you got coming in next year.
I think that they're going to have to make a move. They're going to have to bring in another corner because I think they approached this cornerback position, it seemed like, in the same way that they approached running back in 2015 and receiver in 2018, where you went, oh, we don't need DeMarco Murray. We can run a committee here. And then they end up going, okay, we need to go get Kristen Michael and we need to go get Robert Turbin and we need to make moves because this isn't working out. And then 2018, we don't need Dez Bryant. We can say goodbye. And then they go, we need to make a move. We got to go get Amari Cooper. I think same thing. We don't need Byron Jones. And they're going to get in the season and go, okay, this committee thing for a third time has bit us after we said goodbye to somebody. We need to go make a move. And I think that's eventually what they're going to have. Even if it's, you know, more along the Kristen Michael level move as opposed to the, you know, Amari Cooper type of move. I think they're going to have to go out there and get somebody else who can be more sustainable at cornerback than what they have right now. Question eight here. Speaking of sustainability, can Dalton Schultz, we saw one terrible game, one good game. Can Dalton Schultz be your full-time replacement for Blake Jarwin for an entire season?
I think you're going to have to try and find out if, yes, that's the answer you've got. You have the benefit that he's never going to have to face, you know, bracket coverage or anything like that with the other weapons that you have in the backfield, wide receiver position. For now, I'm happy considering with the considering what we just saw in week two and a massive jump in production and just overall performance. I don't think that you're going into 2021 feeling like Dalton Schultz is your guy, but considering the issues that you have elsewhere that are more pressing, we've talked about a number of them already. If you're going to go out and make a move, I prefer it to be there than at the tight end position where at least you've got a young guy with some confidence and some momentum coming off week two. And you do know that, you know, he does allow you some ability to work as a two-way tight end. The criticism about him, you know, his hands and exactly what he can do as a receiver. Okay, you saw a bit more of a flash in a positive sense of that in week two, but you know he's going to be able to help out in some way as a blocker. He's not going to be an absolute turnstile in that part of the role. So, yeah, I think you're going to, considering what we've just talked about, trading away assets, tight end can't be the move at the top of the list of the fix-it list for the Cowboys right now. So, yeah, roll with Dalton Schultz the rest of the way.
I think he can be your starting tight end for the rest of the year. I think you're going to, I would be in favor, and I tweeted this out on Tuesday, I would be in favor of going ahead and calling up Shewo Alanalua from the practice squad to be your fullback. I think that your plan of just, you know, well, we've got four tight ends and we can have like some H-back types and Jarwin can be our true tight end. I think you got to throw that plan out the window and adjust now that Jarwin's gone. I think you need to just focus on these are your tight ends and that's the role they're going to play. And we're going to bring in a fullback to be an actual fullback. Number nine here. How many more times will the Cowboys score 40 points? Since everybody was so team 40 burger, we got one now. How many times, give me a number you think they're going to get this year?
I have no idea what the record is, but six. They're going to put it up six times and they're going to have to.
Six more or six total?
Let's go six total. So five more. Six total, five more. I think they're just going to have to. I mean, I'm not going to sit here after everything we've talked about for the past, what has it been, half an hour or so? Yeah. Rosy cheeks and rosy, you know, rose tinted glasses about the defense. They're going to have to. Good thing is they got the weapons to do it.
Their last 19 games they've played, from dating back to the playoffs in 2018. You know my stat. The last 19 games, they are 0-10 when they score fewer than 30 points. They are 9-0 when they score 30 or more. That's what it's been for them. They've got to score. In fact, last year when they went 8-8 and they were 8-0 in games where they scored 30 and 0-8 when they scored fewer. If you look back, they are the first team in NFL history not to win a game by scoring fewer than 30 points and then still have a record of 500 or better. That typically that's the record. A team who doesn't win a game scoring fewer than 30 points, your record is generally going to be like 4-12 or 3-13. And so the Cowboys were running up against a little bit of history last year. And so far it's holding true this year. Number 10, and I'm going to be definitely interested for your take on this since you were dumping on him and saying that he was no better than Chaz Green earlier. Should Brandon Knight be the starting right tackle until Lyle Collins returns?
Yeah, if you've only got one spot to feel more impressed, I was not dumping on him as much as I was,
Brandon. Yeah, you were. You said he was a turnstile. You said that he provided as much protection for Dak Prescott as one of those silly face masks protects you from coronavirus. I heard you say that.
Bobby, I'm out here trying not to get
Go ahead. And nobody's freaked out. I'm clearly doing a joke. It's a parody. It's just whatever. Okay. I'm just doing a bit. So if you agree with that take or disagree with that take, nobody yell at me because I was just joking. Go ahead.
Bobby knows that I'm a very health conscious and safe young dad. Well, not so young. I'm a new dad. So that's the perspective.
Yeah, a young child. Lori himself is old as hell.
Yeah. Yeah. A ripe old 32, just turned 32. I'm looking forward to the birthday present in the mail there. What was the question again?
Brandon Knight, right tackle until Lyle Collins returns.
Yeah. If you need a swing addition there, hopefully get Tyron Smith back quickly. I've seen enough of Steel. I'd take Steel Panther over a Terrence Steel at tackle right now.
It is pretty rough. And I have obviously think Brandon Knight played well on, I would have started Brandon Knight in game one. I was stunned that Terrence Steele is the one who got the start over Cameron Irving and Brandon Knight. And I was more stunned when even though Tyron Smith couldn't go, that it wasn't something like, okay, we'll slide Williams out to left tackle, put Connor McGovern in at left guard and let Brandon Knight play at right tackle. And it almost killed him. Cause like I said, that first quarter, Terrence Steele had Dak Prescott running for his life. Number 11 here. We're halfway done now. Number 11, how many times will Ezekiel Elliott rush for 100 yards this season?
Let's give Zeke 7 games of 100 yards rushing.
If he rushes for 100 yards 7 times, this team is not going to the playoffs. I will say that. And I'm not trying to be funny, and I'm not trying to kill the running back fans out there, because God knows saying anything that could kind of be interpreted as slander against Ezekiel Elliott riles people up the same way it does when you say, maybe Romo wasn't perfect. Like, it gets the same sort of reaction from fans. But I am just saying, if you've got a running back rushing for 100 yards 7 times, I feel like you're feeding the running back way too often.
Here's where I'll offer some... just a different take on your interpretation there. And we've already talked about how we didn't want to see Zeke. We agree that we didn't want to see Zeke as the league leader in touches, the NFC.
Or Lori wishes that the Cowboys would run 23 formation, 23 personnel all game.
Bobby, considering this is the first experience so much of your audience has had to my takery.
I'm being sarcastic, people. I got to chill out. Yeah, Lori doesn't think that. He would just want 21 personnel. Sorry, go ahead.
We welcome your sarcasm down this way. Sarcasm is a way of the Australian humor. But getting back to it, I would just say that I think there's a couple times there where it's not going to need 20 touches for him to get to 100 yards, just by virtue of what we've seen from Zeke. Is it fair to say from what we've seen in the first 2 weeks, I feel like Zeke's very close to snapping off a massive run, the likes of which we haven't seen in a couple of years' time.
He looks like he has more juice this year than he has in recent years.
I was in the building with you in the Detroit Lions game back in that amazing rookie season where we saw him rip off a massive, massive touchdown run. Again, coming off a 37 hours of flying or whatever. What on earth I was going through that day. Put my poor wife through that trip straight to Dallas.
Your lovely wife, Alicia. She's the best.
Lovely wife. She is. She's punching severely above my weight class there.
But we both did.
That's true. I'll absolutely agree on that front. I just think there's a chance that one or two times, maybe three times this season, we see him get to that 100-yard mark courtesy of a few massive gains that we haven't seen in the last couple of years, rather than he's going to, you know, pound the rock 25 times a week, you know, week in, week out.
That's the one thing that Zeke supporters, the aggressive Zeke fans seem to, I don't understand why they can't even come and give that and say that he is not the same explosive runner that he was in 2016. 2016, he absolutely was, but I don't think you can look at 17, 18, 19. For a little bit in 18, I think he was. Early in the season, he played really great in 18. He had that big game against the Seahawks that they lost. But overall, I think that it's impossible to look at his body of work and say he hasn't been less explosive from his rookie season. So hopefully that's coming back a little bit here. Number 12, does Sean Lee play in a game this season? I know he's supposed to come back from IR, but it just feels like one of these things to me, like we've seen in the past from the Cowboys, where it's like, oh, he was hurt and he didn't really do in the preseason, but we kind of expect him to come back. It's similar to like Connor McGovern last year. And it's eventually just going to be one of those things where like, yeah, he's not playing this year.
I think he does. I think we do get a swan song. I don't have any faith that he can hold up for more than 3 or 4 weeks at a time. The only that the, you know, if it's not injury, the reason that he wouldn't play would be that they fire Mike Nolan early in the season and just install Sean Lee as the defensive coordinator.
Wow. Goodness. Number 13 here. Who has a higher passer rating on Sunday, Dak Prescott or Russell Wilson?
The cook-off. Let's go with Russell Wilson, just because I don't necessarily think his pass rating, it's because he's going to, you know, play better in a vacuum than Dak Prescott. But let's just say that I think his offense is set up to perhaps put him in less hazardous situations than even the fact that the Cowboys...
And Russell Wilson's running for his life just as much as Dak has been, though.
He is. And I won't pretend that Seattle Seahawks pass rush is anything to crow about. They were clamoring for the likes of Everson Griffin just as much as, and more so than Cowboys fans were. But I'm frightened about what the Cowboys offense is going to do with how the Seahawks can deploy their, you know, Hall of Fame linebacker talent in Bobby Wagner and Jamal Adams lurking around. I just think that there's going to be a few situations where Dak could be put in, and maybe through no fault of his own, position to cough up a football that's just going to affect that rating. So just from a disaster chance set, you know, kind of mindset, I'll give Russell's going to have the better pass rating.
Jamal Adams, and I would not give up what the Seahawks gave up to get Jamal Adams, but Jamal Adams, I mean, it's looking like classic, like Troy Polamalu, like Bob Sanders prime type football. I mean, he has been all world the first few weeks. That's a motivated football player, and he's looked so good, and I'm kind of terrified about that. Number 14 here, who has more pressure to perform? Whose job is more on the line with their performance this season, Kellen Moore or Mike Nolan?
Mike Nolan, because I don't know that another opportunity comes around. As much as the, you know, you see same names get recycled through the, you know, this better than me, through the coaching world, the NFL coaching ranks. Kellen Moore is promising enough offensive mind that he will get chances again, and he's younger. Mike Nolan, one of the when Cowboys fans and media saw that his name was thrown into the coaching, you know, the coaching ranks for Mike McCarthy's new staff, they went and had a look at his recent records. Particularly as a defensive coordinator, it wasn't pretty. And I think you stack two of those up, or you stack another one on top of that recent tail of the tape, and I don't think he's getting another job as a defensive coordinator.
I think that in terms of their immediate future with the Cowboys and keeping a job into next season with the Cowboys, I think Kellen Moore's got more pressure on him, just because Mike Nolan was picked by Mike McCarthy, whereas Mike McCarthy allowed Kellen Moore to stay. And I think if there's trouble this season, it'd be really easy for Mike McCarthy to say, I can do a better job in that role. And so I'm taking that back over, and we're going to let Kellen Moore go. But I think that there's a greater possibility that the Joneses might put more heat on Mike Nolan's job than they would Kellen Moore's, depending on how that performance goes this season. Number 15, Dak Prescott and Tony Romo are now tied at 5 games, the most 400-yard games in franchise history. Dak Prescott's breaking that record. I don't care what anybody says. That's happening. Is it happening in 2020? Does he break the record? Does he have another 400-yard game in 2020?
Yeah. Again, same on the 40-point discussion we had before. He's going to need to. So, yes, Dak breaks the record in 2020. Dak breaks the record. I haven't looked at the schedule. Dak breaks the record before Thanksgiving.
You haven't looked at the what?
Did I say schedule?
You did say schedule. What is that word? I don't know that word. I know a schedule. Bobby. What's a schedule?
Right after the podcast, we can we'll go through our latest English lesson, and I can bring you up to date.
Oh, great! I'm excited. I can't wait to until we're done with 20 questions here. You can tell everybody what Jats Crackers means. I think yeah, that
before Thanksgiving he breaks the record.
Yeah, I think your answer. I think that's fair. I think what was it? I looked it up. Over the last 18 games, 6 of his performances, he's gone over 380 yards, which is obscene. I mean, that's, you know, Patrick Mahomes level. Number 16, do you buy Mike McCarthy's analytics conversion, or were we kind of sold a bill of goods?
No, I think we sold a bill of goods. I think he said enough and to help with the image makeover. I do like it from there's certain parts of it I think he believes in, I think, or at least he's employing.
I think there's parts of it that he's always believed in, is the thing. I don't think he believes anything new about analytics.
No, he's always been aggressive when it comes. I know Kevin Turner who follows the Green Bay Packers closely as well, had talked about that he'd always been a more aggressive coach on in situations like fourth down than we saw with Jason Garrett. I think that's as you said, the analytics haven't changed that. I think he's employing some of that thinking with your 2-point conversions and stuff. But yeah, I think a big chunk of it is, you know, is the perception he wanted to put out there as he launched the next chapter in his coaching career, in his head coaching career. He said, and he worked with, you know, great storytellers, and the piece he did with Tom Pelissero was really interesting and insightful. But I think it was part of what he was trying to do, getting himself back into position to coach an absolute pillar franchise in the NFL.
I mentioned it last week with David Hellman, but RJ Ochoa had the best analogy to me, which was he felt like what Mike McCarthy did with his you know, interviews and things like that, it was the same as a guy who like trains in like specific combine drills and goes and blows up the combine and doesn't have film that matches and more just does what he has to do to kind of sway the decision makers and get them all excited. And that was kind of what Mike McCarthy did with his, you know, oh, look, I got a subscription to PFF and I follow Sigmund Bloom and Football Guys on Twitter now. And, you know, I'm a big fan of all this.
Shout out to Sigmund Bloom.
Shout out to Sigmund Bloom. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think, you know, he's still, and it's fine. He won a Super Bowl. I think given what the Cowboys wanted, what the credentials they were looking for in their head coach, he was the best option available. But I think it's silly to believe that he is all of a sudden Sean McVay or Andy Reid. It's like I told Hellman last week. Mike McCarthy is 100% closer to Jason Garrett than he is Sean McVay. And that's just something that I think Cowboys fans need to accept that reality. And if they do, they can have more proper expectations for what they're going to see on the field on Sundays. Number 17 here, Tony Pollard's snaps through two games this year are down from 2019. And that's one of the things fans, I think, thought they were going to see a lot more of with Mike McCarthy here was an increase in Tony Pollard's production. Does that prove to be the case throughout the season? Do you think that by the end of 2020, Tony Pollard's snaps and usage will be down from 2019?
No, I think we see a reversal. Not a reversal, of course. I just think it's a small sample size to kick off from. Two parts of it. Zeke hasn't, not that you know, need to think only in one back sets or that there's not benefit to different looks with your running back, but Zeke's done a great job through, as you said, most of the first two weeks of the season and has looked closer to his rookie form. But I think with what you lost with Blake Jarwin, just separating a position wise for a second, looking at offensive weaponry, I think he needs to be involved in the passing game a lot more. He needs to be involved in the different packages that you run out there because you have lost one of your threats that does line up a little closer to the line of scrimmage than your wide receivers that are obviously going to be the pillar of the passing game. So I think his involvement picks up just by virtue, you know, I think the loss of Jarwin plays into that massively.
Yeah, I think if when the tackles return and things are a little bit more stable along the offensive line, I think if you don't see an increase in Tony Pollard's snaps, you're not going to. I think that it shows a real commitment to Ezekiel Elliott and believing in him and a real commitment to the 11 personnel, which is fine. But I think it is a little bit of misleading from what they had pushed, it seemed like, about Tony Pollard. Three more questions left here. Who leads the Cowboys in sacks at the end of the season?
Alden Smith.
Randy Gregory.
I would.
That'd be great.
Either a fantastic story or he's got two sacks and his defense has gone to new depths.
If they continue to rush the passer as poorly as they have over the next 4 weeks, I absolutely do believe it will be Randy Gregory. If they pick it up and Alden Smith can have three or four stacked up by the time Randy comes back, then I'll give it to Alden Smith. But I mean, if we're looking at 1 to 2 sacks for guys by the time he comes back, I think Randy Gregory can make that up in an instant. I think Randy Gregory is going to have a big season when he comes back. Two more questions here. When we look back on him at the end of his career, will Leighton Vander Esch's durability be viewed the same as Sean Lee?
I think it'll be sadly, I think that it's a different type of injury. With Sean Lee, it was legs and knees and soft tissue and this and that. That frightens me that it's the same. I know it's not the neck injury that a lot of people thought it was when he got that initial test on the sideline. But yeah, I think we could be looking at a player through no fault of his own, through, you know, a broken collarbone is not a conditioning thing. That's a contact injury that can happen. It hits you in the wrong point. But at this rate, I do.
We know all about broken collarbones and sitting down.
We certainly do. And Cowboys fans knew the timeline as well pretty quickly. I think unfortunately with Leighton Vander Esch, we're going to be looking at for different types of injuries, but the same type of conversation. How much are we going to get out of this guy and for how long?
Okay. So without looking at the schedule, I am going to say to you that they're 1-1 through 2 weeks. Probably should have been 0-2, but realistically with some better performances could be 2-0. 1-1, how has your projection adjusted? What's your projection at this point through 2 weeks for their final record?
I thought they were a 10-win team. I thought I had too much faith, it seems like, in the trio of edge rushers. I'm dipping that down to 9-7 at this point because I think while that could have been your saving grace for your defense in some games where you could just cause enough disruption to get turnovers and allow the other side of, you know, maybe some short fields and allow Dak to really, you know, launch the offense and his MVP campaign into the stratosphere. I've got so little faith in that side of the ball right now. I know Everson Griffin said it's just week two and he's where he wants to be, but yeah, I'll dip that to 9-7. And it's not lower purely because what on earth's going on with Carson Wentz? You know, the Giants are, and we have a word down here. I don't know if you have it. They're an absolute schmozzle. I'll don't break that one down one. For you later.
Is that like a kielbasa or something?
No, no,
it's I don't know what that is.
They're just a hot mess.
Spell that for me.
And Washington, spell it.
Spell that for me.
S-C-H-M-O-Z-Z-L-E.
Zed. That's a pop DJ. That's the only way I know Zed. I felt like this was a 12-win team because I believed in their talent last year. And I thought regardless of how much Mike McCarthy's changed or what he was going to do, I felt like they were going to get that natural Wade Phillips bounce. Like, oh, here's just a breath of fresh air. Yeah. And just from the, newness factor, even when Dak Prescott first stepped in for Tony Romo, just the newness will have guys playing a little freer and a little more energetic. And they were going to get a natural bounce from that. That has not through 2 weeks looked to be the case at all. There seems to be no bounce. And it seems like a lot of the preparation and chemistry issues that we saw a lot last year seem to still be plaguing them this year. That's not to say they can't work it out, but I did think it would look different just in that respect early on. So the fact that it isn't, I'm with you. I'm bumping it down to right now. I think they're about a 9-7 team, and 9-7 very well may win this division. But I still think
they're winning the division.
I think 9-7 is about what it is. And I think they're a 9-7 team who most every team wouldn't want to play because they don't know which version of that 9-7 team they're going to get from week to week. They may get the team that comes out there and drops, 52 and generates turnovers or something else, but they may end up getting the team that comes out looking flat and makes questionable calls and fumbles the ball five times in the first quarter.
Are they that different a proposition to how people view playing the Falcons? Yes, there's holes all throughout that roster. Yes, there's some interesting coaching stuff going on, but they're dangerous on any day just by virtue of talent at, the wide receiver spot, the quarterback spot.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good comparison. But, they'll get their chance this year. They'll get a couple times a chance to show how they match up against some of the top competition. Just when you look over their schedule and some of the teams that they've got, including Baltimore, I'll be really interested to see how this defense plays Baltimore. And I'll be really interested to see Lamar Jackson in open space against Jalen Smith. But that'll be lots of fun. But until then, you can keep up with Lori's 2 a.m. musings on Sundays and his exhausted takes on the NFL because he's trying to wake up and get his cup of coffee running. You can follow him on Twitter at Lori Horesh. And you can follow his show there on ESPN Australia. It's the Monday Argo NFL show with Ben Affleck and Alan Arkin and, that whole cast. And it's actually Arvo. It's A-R-V-O, which is, again, one of those weird words they use in Australia. But Lori, we appreciate you, man.
And an honor, a pleasure to be on with you. Monday Arvo NFL show, in case you missed that one, me and Phil Murphy. But anytime I get to come on here and chat with you, Bobby, it's always an absolute delight.
Absolutely. Thank you. And we will have one more show this week without Jane Slater, just as she gets wrapped up. But she will be returning next week. But hopefully we'll have a good preview show for you here later this week, taking a look at the Seahawks and preparing for how in the world they're going to try and slow down Russell Wilson.
Did I say schedule?
You did say schedule. What is that word? I don't know that word.